Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. Alright, so first thing we want to talk about today, new table.
I love the table.
New desk here.
It matches.
Yeah, it's very nice. So our old table wasn't really like a studio table.
It was a desk.
It was a steel case desk that I picked out of a catalog when we redid the studio like 5 years ago. No one liked it. Everyone hated it. It was a weird shape, but it was big and it went up and down. And so, yeah, we used that for a long time. So we had this one made. And yeah, we worked with the Microsoft branding people, and they're like, oh, you should do something like this. And it's got this magnetic little strip here. So yeah, we can have whatever we want printed out and put on the front. So we'll probably be changing it up. Bear with us as we figure out camera angles and glare and lighting and all kinds of stuff like that. But yeah, this is a new desk. Get used to it because you'll see it a lot.
And it opens up, you know, some room in the studio as well.
Yeah, and we've got a little, you know,
cable management
stuff. And yeah, I'm very excited about it. So, all right.
You see what excites us.
Yeah, we got a couple other things in the studio, but I'm very excited about that. So from last show, we had some comments. Several people said that Bing It On wasn't available in the region. Sorry about that. I can only check region for my region. And so...
I'm guessing, you know, at some point in the future, it'll, you know, roll out more. You know, if you really want to try it, what you can do is use a VPN.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of anonymous VPNs out there that will have different endpoints in different countries, and you could try it that way.
Yeah, we'll tell you how to circumvent all your nation's proxies there, and just, well, you know, just rest assured that Bing is better, and that enough said. Yeah, so first question we have from Dax1792. He says the app local folder has a location tab in its properties. What are the pros and cons of using that to relocate the folder? We were talking last show about the things that are on that folder, and can you move it if you have like a small drive like an SSD?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize this was in the properties until I went and looked at it after getting that mail. So what are your thoughts on that?
There's really no problem in relocating it. What you really want to do, though, is do it as soon as you've set up your machine.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you don't want to have
Don't do this 2 years into your install.
Exactly. You don't want to have, like, a split of where things are. But there's really no issue in using the location. I do that for my documents, for pictures and stuff like that, as well as if I don't want to actually change the physical location, but I just want to add another one, I just add locations to the library.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. All right. From Mike says, love the show. My home system is Windows 7 Ultimate 64, but I've been having a problem for the last few months where a few times a day Explorer will just die. I don't see anything obvious in the logs and haven't been able to find anything specific that causes it. I could be watching videos, browsing, switching between apps, whatever. All of a sudden, Explorer stops responding, looking for a solution. Dialog pops up, followed by a restart. I have AVG antivirus on the system, and it doesn't find anything. Also, the CPU isn't busy or RAM full when this happens. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, just go into the event log, and when this happens, send me the event log, essentially. My guess is there's a bad shell extension. Especially if this is happening while you're watching videos or browsing the folder, it kind of tells me that there's a bad shell extension in the Explorer process that's taking it out.
Okay.
But the event log may or may not show specifically the extension that's causing it, but it'll allow me to backtrack and get a dump of the process.
Yeah, I mean, the question was a little bit longer. He said, I thought about using Process Explorer to create a dump file, but without knowing when it's going to happen, and since it's Explorer itself with problems, I expect the dumps would be massive. This is where I insert a joke. Any ideas on that?
Yeah, the dumps are actually not that big. And like I say, with the event log, I'll be able to backtrack for the dumps that get sent back here and be able to do some investigations on it.
Okay, cool. All right. From Jimmy, I always watch a show and wait for new episodes. And here's a question I can't find an answer to. I use Outlook 2010 with my Office 2010 and my Windows 7 64-bit PC. No problem receiving all my Gmail emails, but I can't get it to sync correctly with any of my Hotmail and Outlook.com email accounts. I've tried removing them and adding them back in one at a time to narrow down which accounts and folders are causing the problem, but all of them eventually cause sync errors. I've enabled logging, which catches the issue again, but I can't seem to pin down the folders causing the issue. If you email me back, I'll send you whatever logs or files you need. It'd be great if you could tell me how I go about fixing a sync issue, as it's been a problem for years. So, yeah, I pinged Nick Fillingham, which, by the way, Nick is on paternity leave. Had a baby.
Congratulations,
Nick. So I'm sure he's getting no sleep right now. but he forwarded this on to the Hotmail engineering team, and they had a response. They said, looks like you have a corrupted deleted. They looked at the logs and stuff, and it said, looks like you have a corrupted deleted message, and sent along a link to a page that should be able to help fix this. And we'll link to that in the show notes. But, yeah, if you still have problems with that, give us a ping. We'll get back in touch with Steve Kafka from the Hotmail team, and he said he can take care of that. So
it looks like, you know, judging by that answer, you could also go to the web interface for Hotmail and clean out your deleted items.
Yeah.
And that should also basically clear it up.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Speaking of Nick Fillingham, he had his own question. He says, I just put Windows 8 32-bit on my dad's Toshiba netbook. The screen resolution is too low to run Metro apps, which is fine. You can live without that. But whenever I turn on the machine cold boot, I see the BIOS screen and a new Windows 8 logo for a few seconds, and then it shuts down completely. When I press the power button a second time, everything boots perfectly. If I reboot the machine, there are no issues. It's just when starting cold. It's more of an annoyance than anything else. But I'd love to work out what's going on and how to resolve.
I think people know my particular feelings on netbooks.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into it any more than that, but it sounds like in this particular piece of hardware, Windows 8 fast startup, it might be causing an issue. Is the first thing that came to mind based on those symptoms.
Yeah.
Where when you shut down the machine in Windows 8, you don't actually shut down the machine. It goes into a mode where your session is shut down and then the machine goes into hibernate, which you know, writes out to disk, and then when you start up again, it just resumes from that point on, and then logs you into your you just log into your session that way. It makes it so that it doesn't have to go through all of the same reinitialization that really doesn't have to happen.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, there might be something wrong in like the video card initialization, which is, you know, one of those things that we've seen in the past where fast startup could be causing the issue. So for this particular machine, since it's a netbook, you might not actually care about the startup like how fast the startup is on
it.
Or it's already a pretty fast startup. You can disable the fast boot by going to your power options. And then choose what the power button does. And then down here is the option for turning on fast startup. It's on by default, but you can disable it and then see if that actually resolves the issue.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, from Valerio, he says, tons of back and forth on a long problem. Well, I wrote that. That's tons of back and forth on a long problem that started like this. He says, hi, I recently installed Windows 8 on my notebook. I chose to upgrade path from Windows 7, but since then, the fan is so loud, it never goes in idle, even when CPU utilization is under 10%. I even tried with a clean install, but nothing. How can I return to the silent notebook I used for so many years? So you went back and forth in the middle of the night, during the day, late afternoon, early morning, looked at the DX Diag log, asked about chipset drivers, and was it designed for Vista? And so talk a little bit about that. What were you looking for there?
So this one was a design for Vista machine.
Yeah.
And generally for laptops, OEM machines, when you install Windows on it on its own, it's not often enough because we don't have every possible driver in box for OEM machines. They have to add on custom drivers often, you know, much later after we ship in order to make their systems work perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, generally speaking, when you throw the OS on, things are just going to work. And in this case, everything did work. It's just that the fan control, which is specific to that machine's BIOS, is controlled by, you know, a different set of drivers. It's not controlled by the system.
And the machine was a VGN SR11M, just so you know. And I'm going to put that in the show notes because anyone who wants to fix this, we end up with a solution.
Yeah.
Actually, I think they found their own solution for it. So the solution ended up being to install a Sony shared library, a utilities series that they had, an event service, power management, the VIO control center, and then the VIO original function settings. And I'll link to all five of those, or six, and those all together end up fixing the problem.
Which is unfortunate because having to install so many different things to make that work is, you know, not a great end user experience. So we really try to impress upon OEMs to have the minimum number of special drivers and special utilities to control basic functions.
Yeah.
And this is hopefully going in a lot better direction with the new design for Win 8 systems that are UEFI-based. A lot of those problems that were in BIOS-based systems alone are remedied by going to an EFI-based system.
Cool. All right, next question from Musman. He says, love the Defrag show. Every week I learn something new. Thanks, guys. I have two questions regarding Windows 8. One, recent documents. In Windows 7, I can quickly launch my recent documents from the Start menu. This is especially helpful as I'm able to launch my recent documents from my recent programs quickly. It's even more helpful because programs that do not have recent documents built in, like Notepad, still work from the Start menu. My question is, how can I achieve the same behavior in Windows 8 Start screen? There's no way to launch my recent documents for a particular program. The second question is title bar min max color change in Win 8. How do I change the title bar text color min max icon color of the window in Windows 8? I like to use a dark theme, and when I do that, the title text min max icon are not legible. Any way to change them? So let's talk about the first one. This is one of the questions that came in the middle of the night, and I actually rolled over, read it. And then I felt bad. I was like, oh, I at least want to say, you know, if for Notepad anyway, pin Notepad to the taskbar, mm-hmm. and then you can use jump lists
right.
for recent items. So, and then I was like, you know, I'll write more in the morning. Forget it. I should have just got up, jumped in the shower, and started my day because I couldn't stop thinking about it all night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had another solution in the morning that I tested out. The location on the hard drive that keeps the recent items like that mm-hmm. is still there,
mm-hmm.
and it's still collecting good data,
mm-hmm.
But it's not exposed in the UI like it was with Windows 7.
Right.
So one of the things that you could do is go to C, users, username, app data, roaming, Microsoft, Windows, recent, and that's a directory. And if you pin that to... roaming, Microsoft, recent? No, Windows, and then recent. So this is a directory, and if you sort this by date, this is kind of doing similar to...
Assuming I had documents on this.
Assuming machine. You had something in there. I turned mine off as well. But, you could pin this to your Start menu.
Yep.
And you probably just right-click on recent there in the breadcrumbs, and then just do... No, can't do it from there. All right, well, you could do it in the path. Pin that to your Start menu. When you click on that, it'll fire up Windows Explorer. You can sort by date, and that's kind of giving you the same thing. And that's the best solution that I have for you at this point. For the other part, changing the title bar and color.
I got it pinned.
Cool, all right. And for the other part, as far as changing the look of the title bar and icons and stuff like that, I don't know of a way.
That's controlled by the theme. That's the colors are not changeable.
Yeah, so sorry about that, but number two, we don't have anything. So there you have it. You can pin that to the Start menu, and at least you have a way to see recent items. From Yarrell, which is weird because Yarrell is also my name spelled backwards, but... From Yarrell Nesrell, it says, in IE, there used to be a simple way, a big orange button to tell you what the RSS link was for a site that you were looking at. What happened to that? Where can I do something similar with IE10? By the way, I love the show, well, Gove anyway, which seems just rude.
Weird, yeah.
But yeah. All right, Yarrell, the way that you do that is you click on View, Toolbars, and add the command bar. And on the command bar, on the right side... or left if you're Gove, You'll see there's your old RSS button, and this will light up orange when there's an RSS feed for the site. And this is a simple way to get the RSS that you can add to, you know, whatever RSS reader that you're using. And yeah, I use this all the time, which is why I was looking for it. I mean, Yarrow was looking for it. All right, from Norm, love the show. Look forward to each episode and always amazed at the level of expertise you guys display. The depth of clarity of your answers to viewer questions are spot on. Well, Norm, I'm sorry to tell you that I've conditioned so many people to stroke my ego that now we have too many people saying this, I can't move your question up to the top. But he says, I've been experiencing an issue following my recent upgrade to Windows 7 64-bit Home Premium SP1. After performing a clean install, everything with Windows 7 appears to be normal, except that immediately after booting, I do not have internet access. The device manager shows no issues with the Ethernet controller, and the only way that I've been able to restore my internet connection is to uninstall the device and rescan for new hardware. After the Ethernet controller driver is reinstalled, internet issue experience with Windows 7, I think I missed a line. Oh, connectivity returns. The next time I have to reboot, I have to repeat uninstall, reinstall routine, a real pain. A web search revealed that this apparently was an issue experience with Win 7 RC, but I would have thought it had been resolved before RTM. So, Gove, what say you?
We did go back and forth. We had a good conversation about this one. It was really odd because, you know, if you start up the machine, it's not working, and then you uninstall it, and then have it rediscovered, and then everything is working again, is a very odd set of symptoms. So I didn't actually think there was anything wrong with his driver because he could actually get it to work. So if there's nothing wrong with the driver, it sounds more like there's something else on the system that's interfering with it. So I got him to send me a listing of his programs, of what he had installed. Two things came to mind in his listing. One of them was Bonjour, and that was actually the actual thing that was causing this issue. It's not actually a problem with Windows, it's a problem with Bonjour and how it registers itself and kind of screws around with the DNS server when the Ethernet controller is coming up. So uninstalling that actually made the problem go away. I don't know if he's actually installed a later version to see if that works. In this particular case, Bonjour came bundled with something else, so I don't know how old the program was. It doesn't happen on every machine. You know, I know a lot of people use it. It comes with iTunes. That's how they set up their AirPlay, AirStream, Air something or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's not actually essential, but it enables some scenarios for some people in some cases.
Yeah.
I know that every time I install iTunes, yes, I install iTunes, I uninstall Bonjour because I don't use anything from it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Next question. What is the purpose of a 100 megabyte partition in Windows 7? Can it be deleted?
That is part of the recovery and tools and booting partition for Windows. No, you can't delete it. If you can delete it, then your machine won't boot.
Yeah. So don't delete it.
Exactly. It's a partition there that is designed for, BitLocker. If you ever turn it on, it requires that partition. It's required for EFI booting. You know, it's just one of those things where don't mess with it. It's 100 meg. This is like, you know, a drop in the bucket to what you have on your system.
Yeah. Okay, next question. I used to use XP mode in Windows 7. Is it still in Windows 8? And if not, what else can I use?
It is not in Windows 7. It has been included. However, if you get Windows 8 Pro, you get Client Hyper-V if you have a machine.
And Enterprise.
And Enterprise, yes. Client Hyper-V can run XP mode without an issue. You just need to, you know, create the VM for it.
And it doesn't come with XP,
no.
So you'd have to have XP. But if you've been a computer user for a while, you probably have like 10 copies of XP laying around with
Absolutely. Keys.
And yeah.
But, you know, kind of ask yourself, what do you use XP mode for? What did you use it for in the past? If you can, you know, get off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the system is just going to run better if you don't have to run it in a VM.
Yeah. Okay. All right, next question. I have three laptops which I want to connect. One of them, wireless. The wireless doesn't work, and on the other, LAN wire doesn't work. Is there any way in which I can use both the wireless ad hoc as well as LAN wires to connect the three of them together? All three of them work on Windows 7. So I said, yes, you should be able to set up internet connection sharing with the one that does work. Mm-hmm. With wireless, it works as well.
Mm-hmm.
That will work with the one where the wired LAN doesn't work if it has wireless. But the one with broken wireless is going to need its own cable no matter what. And if you only have one wire, you'll need to have some kind of router or something if you only have one cable. And the other thing that I should add as a caveat for that is internet connection sharing won't work if your machine is domain joined.
Right.
So you'll need to set up another account if that's something you want to do. But yeah, there you have it.
You know, there's some additional things that you can do if you want to purchase hardware, right? You can get a USB to Ethernet controller.
Mm-hmm.
to fix the one wireless not working, or the one wired not working.
Yeah.
You can, if you have FireWire ports on everything, you can connect them up via FireWire. If you have...
The one where wireless isn't working, you could do a USB wireless adapter.
Yes. Yep, USB wireless adapter. You can do, if you have a special USB 2 host-to-host cable, it's a cable that has a little nubbin in the middle.
A little knot thing,
yeah. They're pretty easily recognizable. Don't use one without it.
Yeah.
And you can connect your machines up that way.
So we were talking before the show, and you said FireWire.
FireWire.
I've never heard of doing network over FireWire before.
It is one of those things that people never use it for.
Yeah.
But it is entirely possible.
I wouldn't even have thought you could do it, but, well, you can do anything. But
it's one of those things where nobody ever used it for it, but it is actually capable of doing it.
So we won't explain to the one person out of a billion Windows users who would actually do that. But, yeah, email Gove if you really want to set up your network to go over FireWire.
It's actually plug and play, really.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything special. It just needs an IP address.
Okay. Very interesting. All right. Next question. I've deleted about 500,000 files from a folder, and I didn't think to press shift in order to delete them straight away. Now they're clogging my recycle bin. Windows claims it'll take 4 hours to empty it. And it claims to be doing about 68 files per second. Is there some magic or alternative method that I can speed this up? So, yeah, there's a couple things here. First of all, you were saying you could set your recycle bin to not hold so much.
Yeah, you can reset the limit for the recycle bin. I think it normally defaults about 10% of the drive. If I actually show all of my icons and go to properties of the recycle bin, yeah, you can change how big it is. So I have a 3 gig recycle bin.
Yeah, and you can also, you know, just have them immediately deleted too. By
yeah, I don't usually recommend that one.
I know, it kind of defeats the whole purpose of, I'd prefer just to hold shift if that's what I want to do.
Exactly.
And the other thing too is, it might say 4 hours, but I'm betting it didn't really take 4 hours. Sometimes it misrepresents the time, and it speeds up dramatically after that. So,
right.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that it would take that long, no matter how many files you have in there. All right, next question. I would like to see the sizes of subfolders in a folder, similar to Linux dush command. How can I do that?
In the standard command window, that is not available.
So I could have swore that back in the DOS days, I used to be able to see the sizes of a directory.
In the DOS days when, you know, drives were not bigger than 30 meg.
Yeah. And so that's...
it was a lot easier.
You don't do that anymore with...
Windows, or the command prompt doesn't do that. It's just too... it takes too long to calculate.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, most users don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go into a directory, you'll be able to see, you know, how much that particular directory takes up. It's one of the standard listings. But no, we don't do an enumeration, because otherwise... in order to get that, we'd have to cache it, and we'd all constantly be able to update it. We'd have to update it all the time, so it just takes too long.
Yeah.
You could do it with a PowerShell script if you really wanted to. There's, you know, just go out and search for it. I know there's at least a half dozen different ways of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I typically do it is I right-click on the folder and do properties.
Yeah.
And it'll go through and figure it out then. And
which is exactly why we don't do it all the time.
Exactly, and a lot of times, depending on the directory, if there's a lot of files in there and a lot of subdirectories, it can take some time for that to fill in, which thankfully it's not doing that every time I click on the apparent directory. Okay.
And there's, of course, the wonderful Windows tool, WinderStat.
Everyone loves Windows.
Everyone loves it.
I love it. You love
graphical
it.
Graphical representation of how much space things are taking up.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, when you look at it, don't try to delete the Windows WinSXX folder. It'll look big. Don't try to delete it.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is when you start WinderStat and you have it look at a hard drive, you can see how long it's taking to figure that out, which is probably why, again, we don't do that. Okay. All right, next one. I accidentally hit enter after clicking on a mail to before installing Outlook on Windows 8. Now Windows 8 is set up to use the start screen mail as a client. When I click on a mail link in Outlook, I have to wait for mail to start up from the start screen. Where can I fix this?
You can go to the default programs and reset your association. So go to Control Panel. Programs, default programs, set your defaults, this will eventually come up.
Cool. All right, so you come in here and you can see it says loading at the bottom, and then change email instead of being...
you can set either mail to be your default, or now assuming I had Outlook installed. Oh, yeah, I do have Outlook installed. Since that one is the default, you can then switch back and forth by setting that.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. Pick of the week time. Pick of the week. So the first pick of the week we have is we're shooting this on Thursday. You're going to watch this on Wednesday. So it was the previous Thursday. So last night was a debate. And on Xbox Live, they had a very cool thing where you could... interact and watch the debate live on Xbox, and you could also give your opinion on who was winning.
And, that's a pretty cool use of, you know, in your living room interactivity.
Yeah, exactly. I have a friend who works at CNN. They were pretty proud that they had a focus group so that you could see how things were going during the debate from their focus group. This is way better because you actually get to participate on this.
Mm-hmm. And it's really cool when you have like a bunch of people in your living room that are doing this.
Yeah,
right?
And only one person, you know, for an account can actually do it.
Sure.
So you all have to agree. Good luck there. but it was really neat. And I wanted to look at this last night, but Laura had us all in late doing something that I can't talk about yet. But, so I didn't get a chance to look at this last night. But they're going to do it for the other two debates, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to check that out and see how that worked. And do the little thumb thing to give my opinion on this. That was pretty cool.
And don't forget, you get free Halo 4 Warrior armor.
Nice.
You're golden. You kind of look like C-3PO.
Very nice. I like that.
A badass C-3PO. Yeah.
Very cool. All right. And then second pick of the week, Gove, do your iFi. You got iFi up there.
iFi. Now, for those of you that don't know this product, it's an SD card that has a wireless Wi-Fi adapter essentially built right in. It gives you the ability to, you know, pop it in your camera, take pictures, and have that automatically upload if you're near an access point to either a website or your computer, and it gives you unlimited storage.
Yeah.
Or virtually unlimited storage. And they've just come out with their new 16 gig Class 10 card.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Class 10 is kind of my bare minimum for cameras.
And Class 10, that's how fast it is, right?
It's a rating on what its potential sustained throughput is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually like 20 megabits per second, 10 to 20 megabits per second.
Yeah.
I really like it.
And it's got some stuff like instant Facebook sharing, which seems as dangerous as anything could possibly be.
You know what you do in that case? You get two different cards, and you put in two different cameras, and you have one camera that's dedicated for the Facebook sharing.
You would never mix up the two cameras and have the most embarrassing situation of your entire life happen.
crappy point and shoot for Facebook.
There you go. All right.
Nice DSLR for everything else.
So my nice DSLR uses compact flash. Did these guys, do they have a compact flash solution or what?
I don't believe so.
I wonder if there's like a compact flash card that you could stick this card in.
An adapter.
Adapt it. I don't know.
The standards themselves are technically different.
Yeah.
So
and
I don't know.
It seems like people are moving to SD for media, but
dual slot SDs.
The camera that I would want to use for this is still compact flash. So yeah. But I have a camera that uses SD, and that would be a cool option. And I used to have an iFi card. I had this great idea. I was going to take the iFi card, stick it in a Canon PowerShot that I had. And I was going to do a Wi-Fi network on my phone using
a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah, there's a guy I was talking to at the time who did Wi-Fi router. I think it's wifirouter.com or something for Windows phones. And I was really excited. I was going to go to CES and take pictures and have them automatically just go up. You aren't going to get any kind of signal at CES, so just forget that. You can't even make a phone call at CES. So there's just no bandwidth to be had. You are lucky if you can even get like a text message to go through at CES because there's so many people clogging every cellular network there is. So that didn't actually pan out too well, but it wasn't their fault. I mean, it was more of a wireless carrier problem. But anyway, there's my story. So the third pick of the week that I have, Delta 6. So saw this on Engadget, and I am quite thrilled. So this is a little piece of hardware that they're talking about, $89, which seems very cheap to me. But it'll let you do some first-person shooters with a real gun controller, which I'm kind of a fan of. And if you remember back to the day, I had this big idea for something I called War Hero, which was a rifle like that that had a tablet mounted to the front of it, and you could use a gyro on it to aim, and when you lean your face on it, it would zoom in with the scope. This kind of does the same thing. It's got some features like that, and you actually have to drop the magazine and put a new one in to reload, which I think is cool. Lots of really good ideas there. I'd have to try it out to see how much I like it, though.
Wouldn't be able to take it with you on a plane, though.
No, not carry on.
Not
that's
carry
for
on.
Sure.
I'm thinking that even check baggage, they're gonna wonder.
Yeah, and if you scroll down, you can see that the idea here too is that you would have a couple of different modifications, so you could turn it into a sniper rifle or a subcompact. You've got a M203 grenade launcher on the front, which was also on my War Hero concept that will never happen. I'm thrilled about this. More power to them. I hope they pull it off, and it's incredible. Still, $89, that seems like a very low price for something with that much hardware.
Kind of wish it had a Halo version of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be a very cool piece of hardware.
If you could use it with Halo, it'd be next best thing.
Yeah.
So, there you have it. I can't wait to try this out. I'll be standing in line for this, of course, because I want to the first on my block with it. I'll try it out.
Of course.
I'll try it out. Yeah.
Now, the next best thing with that is now couple it with Kinect.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the things I was thinking about,
too. I mean, when you crouch with it. You know, it actually senses you, everything.
Exactly. And you could actually, like, stick a chair in your living room and hide behind the chair, and that's like a barrel or something.
Exactly, yeah.
So many different options here. Gov, what are we doing here? We should be actually coding things for this. Come on. But anyway, yeah, million dollar idea. Take it and run with it. Go have fun. I can't wait to try this out. So there you have it. I'll link to this in the show notes. Check it out. And if you ever get to try this before me, please let me know what you think of it because it looks very cool. I like the idea of having physical devices that replicate real world things for, especially for gaming.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, it makes it all the more immersive.
Yeah. So, like, real fishing pole in Kinect, that kind of thing would be kind of cool. I like the idea of that. So, there you have it. All right, so that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, if you have a question, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave your question in the show notes, and we'll get back to you. We prefer the email so that we can go back and forth in the middle of the night, and you can keep me up, and I don't get any sleep because I'm thinking about all your problems. and Gove will do the same, I promise. So see you next week.